What is up, everybody? This is Dr. Joe Armstrong. Today is 5/24/24. It is 9:30 in the morning, and we have some stuff to talk about. Not a whole lot of massive changes that are going to change things right now, but there's some things coming down the pipe that we need to be thinking about. As always, we start things off by reminding everyone that milk is safe and meat is safe as well, repeatedly confirmed by FDA and USDA. Just how we start all of these discussions, just reminding everyone that that is the case. Meat is safe, milk is safe. Probably the biggest news to report as far as something that happened recently is that CDC announced that there is a second human case of HPAI H5N1 in a person. This case was identified in Michigan. This person recovered just fine, doing well. They had signs of conjunctivitis similar to the other case. The individual is a worker on a dairy farm where H5N1 virus had been identified in cows. So, second human case officially reported by CDC. Are there likely other cases out there? As we've discussed in the past, absolutely. The people that are most at risk are people working directly with cows that have H5N1. And if we think about that population, we need to remember who those people are. Most often, they are people that have moved here from another country. English may not be their first language, and they may or may not be comfortable coming forward or seeking medical help or being in the limelight when it comes to the media or talking to the government. So again, the onus comes down to us, dairy farmers, veterinarians, people that are on farm. We need to be watching out for these people, making sure they're staying safe and taking reasonable precautions when it comes to PPE. I've been pretty vocal and I'm going to say it again here. I do not agree with CDC's recommendations for PPE. I think they're very impractical in a normal working setting on a dairy. What I do think is practical is thinking about the problem areas and where we see this virus entering the body. We know that eyes are a problem. So I do think that safety glasses are a good idea. Does it need to be a full set of goggles that are incredibly uncomfortable to wear, going to fog up, all those things? That's what CDC is recommending. Do I think that's 100% necessary? I think we need to weigh whether or not people are going to actually use the safety device versus what's better than nothing. Well, if you give someone the full set of completely enclosed goggles with indirect vents that are horribly uncomfortable, odds are they're going to be not worn pretty soon. So I'd rather we find something that's comfortable and is going to stay on our face and actually be used rather than trying to find some of these things that I just don't see as practical in the real world. In addition to that, when we have the glasses on, it will remind us to not touch our face. We know from our experience with COVID and people, touching your face is a big risk factor, and we know that we have an issue with eyes. The combination of wearing gloves and eye protection will remind us not to touch our face, in addition to protecting us from any splashing that might occur when we are handling raw milk in any way. So eye protection, I mentioned gloves. Those are two things that are a good idea. I do think that it is a good idea to either shower before you leave the premise, if you can. Definitely need to change our clothes and our boots before we leave. And then if you're not going to shower, then it might be a good idea to also wear something over your head to protect your hair. So there's just one less thing that can collect any splashing or spilling or viral particles that would then go home with you. All right, last thing on PPE, and it's really important. The Minnesota Department of Health has made available some of these supplies for people to order on a one-time basis. So we're talking about N95 masks, face shields, eye protection, and gloves. And those can be ordered through MDH. I will include the link and information on how to do that in the show notes. So all you need to do is go in, make a request by filling out an MDH survey, and they will send you what you need. These supplies through MDH are intended for businesses and outreach organizations where they have workers that may be in contact with H5N1 and they can't get PPE through routine sources. So keep all that in mind, but I'll put that in the show notes for you to find. All right, enough about PPE. Let's move on to some other things. I've talked before on the show about what I think should happen with lactating dairy cattle and exhibitions or shows. And it is my opinion that in the current state, lactating dairy cows should not be at shows or exhibitions. And I think that should be the case through at least the end of the year. So that it would include all the county fairs, state fairs, all the exhibitions in the fall, all the way through the end of the year at the very least. Why do I say that? Well, we know that probably the most infectious media when we look at this disease is raw milk. Raw milk has the ability to really move this virus around. So having lactating dairy cows at a show is a major risk, not only for all the other cows at the show, but the poultry that might also be there. And we cannot forget about the people component as well. So for me, when we go to a show with a lactating dairy cow and we're sharing milk equipment and we have milk that has to be disposed of in some way, and I would argue that milk from those shows should not be used in any way. It should be disposed of. It presents a major hassle and a major risk, and it is not worth having lactating dairy cows at shows or exhibitions. Not right now, at least. Is there potentially a compromise in there somewhere where we look at testing for every single lactating dairy cow that goes to a show, regardless of whether or not they cross state lines? Maybe. But for me, our lack of knowledge as an industry about this virus and how it works and how it moves, and knowing that we have a lot of these shows and county fairs, state fair included as well, where we have poultry and cattle on the same premise, it's just not worth it to have lactating dairy cows there at this time. So why am I talking about this? And we talked about it before. Why am I talking about it again? Well, late in the day on 5/22, USDA released a document that was titled Recommendations to Minimize Influenza Transmission at Dairy Cattle Livestock Exhibitions. So right off the bat in this document, there's a couple paragraphs that I think are really important to read, and they speak to where USDA stands on this. Important to note, everything in this document is recommendations. They are not requirements, but it is pressure on the states to make a decision. And they need to make one because we're coming right into show season and we're coming right up into county fairs in Minnesota start early June. And we need to know soon because the kids need to know soon. If they're planning on bringing a lactating dairy cow and they got to switch it up, they've got to know. And it needs to be fair to them and give them enough time to change the game plan. Okay, I'm going to read you two paragraphs. We'll break it down. First paragraph, quote, USDA has identified spread of this disease between cows within the same herd, spread from cows to poultry, spread between dairies associated with cattle movements, and cows without clinical signs that have tested positive, end quote. That's about as clear as they have been about how this virus and this disease has been transmitted. Cows within the same herd, cows to poultry, spread between dairies associated with cattle movements, and cows without clinical signs that have tested positive. That is very clear, and I'm happy that they were so straightforward. Great to see it in one spot and have it be clear. All right, let's get to that second paragraph, a little longer, so bear with me. Quote, fairs and exhibitions provide an opportunity for learning and to showcase the hard work invested in agricultural animals. Unfortunately, these exhibitions also provide an opportunity for illness to spread among animals from multiple herds. Appropriate measures should be taken to minimize the potential for spread of influenza. It may not be possible to prevent all transmission of influenza viruses at livestock exhibitions. The measures described here are offered for careful consideration depending on the needs of the specific exhibition. End quote. So that sums it up pretty well. They are an opportunity, a giant mixing opportunity. That's what shows and exhibitions are. Multiple animals, multiple species, multiple herds represented. They're a giant mixing vat and a potential spot to spread influenza around in a very efficient manner. I'm not going to get into a ton of the specifics in this document because there's not a whole lot to say. The document just takes a really, really long road into looking at how big of a pain it's going to be to have lactating dairy animals at a show right now. And they hint at some of the issues that could come up as far as consequences of allowing lactating dairy cows to go to a show. It's a really, really long-winded document that lays out that it's probably not a good idea to have lactating dairy cows at a show without specifically saying that. So one of the things that we need to talk about is what would happen if an animal was healthy going to a show and then became ill at the show and tested positive. Now what? That's one of the big questions that's kind of hinted at in this document. And it's a good one because there's some potentially major consequences for what that means. So an animal goes to a show. They're joined by animals from all over the place. And now that is one premise with livestock. And if one of those animals tests positive at that premise, that has an impact on every other animal at that premise. So remember way back that federal order happened. Then we had a guidance document that gave us a little more details about that federal order. And one of the things in there says, quote, lactating dairy cows are not eligible to move interstate for 30 days from the most recent collection of any sample that tests positive. Although movement under specific circumstances may be discussed and agreed upon with the respective state animal health officials and the U.S. Department of Agricultural, Animal, and Plant Health Inspection Service. End quote. So that's just a reminder to tell us that once that lactating dairy cow tests positive at a show, that impacts all the other lactating dairy cows at that show. Not to mention all the other risks as far as infection to poultry that might be there, swine that might be there, other cattle, and people. Don't forget the people. Now, all other lactating dairy cattle at that show cannot move interstate for 30 days or until the state animal health official and USDA APHIS get together and decide upon the circumstances that would allow for the lactating dairy cattle at that show to move. You can see how big of a mess that is going to cause if you have a show where there's many animals that come from out of the state. In addition to that, that is just the federal side of things. If we have a herd that tests positive in Minnesota, we don't have a whole lot of direction right now, but you can think of that show or that exhibition as a herd testing positive because now those animals have been commingled and together. If that herd tests positive, the state is likely to not just let movements happen wherever and without any control measures. It turns into a mess really, really, really fast. That's my point. And that's really kind of the point of this document is to point out those things without specifically saying lactating dairy cows should not be at shows. That's pretty much what this document says, in my opinion. All right, we've belabored that point quite a bit. Let's move on. One other thing has come out, and there is no official document on the website yet because there's not all the details figured out. But there's been some emails circulating, some announcements made, and it's public enough to say here. So back on 5/13, USDA released a document titled USDA Support for Producers with Affected Dairy Premises. And basically it was a list of support that could be provided and applied for through USDA for dairies that were impacted by the virus. Included in that support were some PPE funds, biosecurity and implementation funds, some funds to install heat treatment options to dispose of milk, a little bit of money to pay for veterinary costs and treatment of sick animals, and then some money to offset shipping costs. Important things, a little bit of a drop in the bucket when it comes to the total cost to the dairies that are impacted, but better than nothing. There were some strings attached to that, and it requires working with USDA personnel to develop a plan for the premise, and then lots of checking in and potentially some inspections. All the normal things that come with federal money, the strings attached, and that's not a surprise at all. Now, this other update that I'm referring to was made on the 23rd. And one of the things that I think has been lobbied for, and correctly so, is why can these things only apply to herds that have been impacted? Why not get on the prevention side of things and offer some of these things to herds that have not been impacted yet in terms of biosecurity and those kind of things to try to stay ahead of it and be on the prevention side rather than reactive? So that's part of USDA's announcement is saying, hey, we're going to have some of these things apply to herds that have not been impacted yet, which is a great idea. So support for biosecurity planning and implementation. In the announcement, it says USDA will now provide financial support up to $1,500 per premise to any producer to develop and implement a biosecurity plan based on existing secure milk supply plants. This includes recommended enhanced biosecurity for individuals that frequently move between dairy farms, like milk haulers, veterinarians, feed trucks, AI technicians, etc. In addition, USDA will provide a $100 payment to producers who purchase and use an inline sampler for their milk system. Also in this document, it talks about reimbursing producers for veterinary costs associated with sample collection for H5N1 testing. So USDA is going to provide support to producers by covering fees for veterinarians to collect samples for H5N1 testing. And it's backdated to the federal order date of April 29th. So you can apply for up to $2,000 per premise to cover veterinary fees for collecting samples for H5N1 testing. Also in this document, it says that they're going to offset shipping costs for influenza A testing at laboratories in National Animal Health Laboratory Network labs. So USDA is already paying for the samples to be tested, but now they're going to say, we're going to cover shipment up to $50 per shipment for two shipments per month for each premise. That's pretty nice. You know, they're trying to get samples. That's the goal. They're trying to make it as easy as possible and as low cost as possible to the producer to provide samples for H5N1. Now it's up to each producer at this point to decide if they're going to test. There are some greater good arguments around testing, but that is an individual decision for each dairy at this time. Now, the biggest part of this announcement, and probably the biggest announcement of this entire podcast episode, is that USDA is announcing they are intending to compensate producers for loss of milk production in herds that are impacted by H5N1. So that paragraph says, quote, USDA will soon issue a rule making funding available from the Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm-Raised Fish Programs, ELAP, to compensate eligible producers with positive herds who experience loss of milk production. While dairy cows that have been infected with H5N1 generally recover well, and there is little mortality associated with the disease, it does dramatically limit milk production, causing economic losses for producers with affected premises. USDA can support farmers with the ELAP program to offset some of those losses. USDA anticipates that its forthcoming rule will specify that farmers will receive payments at 90% of lost production per cow for a set period of time retroactive to the date of the confirmation of their positive herd status, starting with the first herd that tested positive in March of 2024. End quote. So they're saying that basically they are trying to make it so that they will quantify milk production lost in each herd, and they will pay indemnity payments to that lost production at 90%. And they are willing to cover the herds that have already lost milk production and had tested positive for H5N1 and had confirmed that. So this is the big carrot in the situation to incentivize testing. If you lose milk production and you officially test positive, you are potentially eligible for indemnity payments for your lost production associated with H5N1. Now, I think this is probably the last carrot in the situation. Now, that's my opinion, but I think it's the last carrot. They are offering a big carrot, indemnity payments for lost production on herds that test positive and officially test positive for H5N1. So herds that choose not to test will not be eligible. I can guarantee that. Now, there will be strings tied to this money. There has to be, because that's the way it works. There will be requirements from the dairies, whatever those are, to qualify for these indemnity payments. But this is the last carrot, in my opinion, from the federal government. They don't have a whole lot else in terms of incentives to provide for testing. And from now on, if this does not result in more testing for the dairy industry and more identification of H5N1 in certain places, it's all stick from here on out. That's my opinion. These indemnity payments have to result in more testing and have to result in control measures from the dairy industry and the states at the state level, or we are going to have USDA come up with rules that they feel are necessary that we're not going to like. And it's not going to be incentive-based, not at all. So there's probably going to be some herds around the country, maybe in Minnesota, that are in a difficult spot right now because they may have been dealing with this for a while and they have it and they haven't tested, or they're kind of on the tail end and they haven't tested yet. But if you want to have any chance at indemnity payments, you got to test and you have to identify that it's H5N1 that has been causing your problem. So if you're on the fence and you're not quite sure if you want to or not, the carrot is the indemnity payment. And I don't want you to miss out on indemnity payments because you did not test in time to identify officially that that is what's been causing your loss of milk production. Just a thought. So if you're dealing with this right now or you're on the tail end of it, you got to make a decision about testing because you're going to need positive PCRs on cows to show that this is what's been causing your problem and what you've been dealing with to qualify for this money. Now, the details are not out yet. Those are expected to come soon, but it's retroactive all the way out to March. So if you want a chance at the money, you got to have a positive official test to qualify. That's the only thing I absolutely know right now about this. We don't have all the details yet. All right, we've been talking for a while now, and it's time to wrap it up. As always, if you have comments, questions, or scathing rebuttals, those can go to themoosroom@umn.edu. If you want to call me, you sure can, 612-624-3610. Check us out on the web, extension.umn.edu. I'll talk to all of you soon, and I'll have more updates as they become available. Thank you for listening, and I will catch you next episode.